Hello and welcome to the Gua Sha Show, helping you get the best results out of Gua Sha and Eastern medicine for the face and the body. I'm your host, Clive Whittam, and every week we explore the world of Gua Sha to help you use and understand this great technique with research and stories and guests and useful tips. So let's get straight into this episode and let's look at the best Gua Sha tool. Hello and welcome to episode 9 of season 1 of the Gua Sha Show. And I thought it was about time to talk a little bit about Gua Sha tools and to give you my insights into the shapes, sizes, materials, weight and general feeling of the tool. And I'm going to be referring to the gentle movements of facial Gua Sha and the strong scraping you might need on your body. So if you ever wondered about which tool to buy, keep listening. So this is one of the most common questions I'm asked, and rightly so, because the market for Gua Sha tools is saturated, and it's difficult to understand what the strange shapes and materials mean and how they're used. We've come a long way from the copper coins which were traditionally used, and there's considerable choice in terms of what the tool is made from. At the moment, jade and quartz are popular, but there's also materials like obsidian, Bian stone, water buffalo horn, steel or copper, plastic, porcelain, and seashells. If you listen to me more, or you read my books, or if you study with me, you'll soon see my opinion on tools. It's no secret, and my message has been consistent for over 20 years. While lots of people fixate about the tools, for me, it's actually one of the least important parts of Gua Sha. So while it's important to find a tool that you're comfortable with and feels good to hold, which has the right weight and size for what you're doing, and also which glides smoothly on the skin. If you've got a fancy tool but you don't know what to do with it, you're not going to do much, and I mean more than just dragging it around the surface of the skin. It's not the tool itself, but what you do with the tool, which is Gua Sha. So let's look at some basic criteria which you can use to judge whether one particular tool is the one for you. So we'll start with the obvious. Is the tool breakable? It doesn't matter how marvelous the tool is, when you drop it on the floor and it cracks or splits neatly into two or smashes into little pieces, it's no longer usable. My clinic right now is very similar to the one I used to have in Melilla in North Africa. So both my clinic now in Barcelona and my clinic in Melilla are both in classic modernist buildings that are the signature of modernist style that's so popular in Barcelona. Very tall buildings with high ceilings and the kind of architectural detail that you don't find in buildings anymore. The floor tiles in Melilla were museum quality and were original throughout the whole floor space in the clinic, which was fairly big. They're the kind of tiles which are made of stone and each individually made and positioned. The whole building used to have the same tiles, but gradually as the building was renovated, the tiles disappeared, and it was only our clinic which was left which had all of the original. And I know that because the lawyer downstairs once came up with a camera and wanted to take photographs of our floor in order to apply for protection for the building. But unfortunately, the apartment above was renovated, and we saw all of these beautiful tiles in the skip outside waiting to be thrown away. So anyway, this floor, which is also in my clinic in the centre of Barcelona, is the Gua Sha tool killer. I've lost so many Gua Sha tools to that floor. It's really easy to drop a tool. And if it's made of porcelain, jade, quartz or other minerals, the chances are it won't survive the fall. Sure, you can keep the tool in a special place. Perhaps it has a box to keep it safe. But there'll be one moment when it's on the table or it's on the sink and you get distracted and smash. So there are huge choices of fragile tools, especially aimed at facial Gua Sha. And as long as you resign yourself to one day losing your precious facial friend in a domestic accident, then they're fine tools to have. If you're looking for a less fragile gouache tool, then materials like metal, plastic and resin would fit the bill nicely. In fact, if I'm travelling and I want to take a tool with me, I take my Japanese acrylonitrile butadiene styrene, otherwise known as ABS, which is made of plastic resin, which is pretty much indestructible. And I've tested this out extensively and there's not even a dent in it. So let's continue with another question you should ask yourself before you buy a gouache tool. Is the tool cleanable? Now, you might be thinking, well, aren't they all? And yes, they are. But if you're ever going to use your gouache tool on someone else, then it's got to be cleaned properly. And by cleaned properly, I mean disinfected. If it's just you, you can get away with washing it in dishwashing liquid and it's not an issue. But if it's not just you, you need to explore ways to clean the tool. After use, microscopic traces of skin and blood cells remain on the tool, and it's not very pleasant to then use the tool or have the tool used on you. So there's a certain procedure which I put together a few years ago to comply with professional disinfection standards, and you can find that on my YouTube channel if you want to see it. I'll put a link in the show notes. It is, however, using bleach, so environmentally it's not ideal. There are hospital-grade disinfection wipes, which are also very, very useful for gouache tools. But anyway, the more you clean the tool, the more it will degrade, and some materials degrade faster than others. Water buffalo horn, for example, is a great natural material for a gouache tool, and it's incredibly common throughout Asia. But you try to clean it, and after a while, it cracks or bends. Metal tools are perhaps the material which can be disinfected the best, and they're often used professionally, especially in the world of physiotherapy, where they use gouache, but they call it something different. The next question to ask is the tool the right size for you? Most commercially available gouache tools range in thickness between 0.3 and 1 centimetre, and how comfortable this will be depends on your hand size. In general, the thinner the tool, the greater the mechanical load on your hand and arm. However, thickness also implies weight, and although the tool should have a certain balanced weight so that as you use it, there's a certain momentum in the movement, if it's too heavy, then it's going to cause hand and arm fatigue as well. Now, as far as shapes go, you can take your pick between things like fish-shaped, angel wing-shaped, and butterfly-shaped, and it could be square, rectangular, triangular, round, and any variation of these. Some metal tools even look like torture instruments, but in the end, shapes are just that, they're shapes. You could probably use any one of them to do gouache, and they would do exactly the same thing. Sure, it may look convenient to have a dip or a bump in the tool here and there, so that it appears to match a specific body part or technique, but it's not necessary. So the key is to choose the shape, size and weight that's comfortable for you and your hands. And the next question is it smooth or round enough? A gouache tool has to be smooth on all sides so that it creates just the right amount of friction on your skin. There are some tools which have edges that are too pointed or sharp, which will feel less comfortable when scraped over the skin. Mineral-based tools like jade, quartz, bianstone and obsidian are often smooth, purely down to the production process, but other materials like buffalo horn, porcelain, metal, resin and wood vary in how appropriate they are to be used in gouache. The sides of a natural material like buffalo horn can actually be scraped with sandpaper, which is quite common in Asia, to make sure that the edge is smooth. Some tools have a jagged edge or dull saw-like serrated section on one side, which is aimed at a specific part of the face. There's a certain gentle technique involved in its use, so it's not supposed to be smooth in that part of the tool. Now, I've got lots of tools. They're everywhere. If I open this desk drawer that's in front of me, I'm going to do it right now. And there we are. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. There's 6 inside this drawer. in between all of the junk that I hide in here. There's one red and black, there's one white, the others are black, and there's a green one. There's jade, quartz, porcelain, resin. And there are two in front of me, just next to the screen. And there are more than a dozen in a plastic tub in the corner behind me. And this is just my office, it's not even my clinic. So if I were to use the tools around me right now, I know that some would require more effort than others. This is because some have rounder, smoother edges and really feel smooth on the face, for example, and some have slightly sharper edges, which are fine to use on the face, but on the body they can dig in a fraction deeper and cause less effort on my part when I'm using gua sha. And another question to ask is it the right temperature? So do you want a tool that always feels cold on the skin? Jade is the obvious choice here, but other mineral-based materials too. They're always cold to the touch. They warm up with the heat of the action of gua sha and by being in your hand too. But there's a definite cold tendency to jade, for example. Now, in the hot Sahara summer where I was before, jade was the perfect material. But in midwinter, when the heating is trying to keep you all warm, it might not be what you want. It's the same, of course, with metal tools, which are freezing cold sometimes. Now, mineral-based stones can be warmed up in hot water and used on the body a bit like a type of hot stone therapy. But that's a technique, not the nature of the minerals. Now, plastic resin, wood, and buffalo horn tools are generally more stable in their temperature and feel warmer. So, if you're going to use the tool on other people, you have to ask yourself, is the tool professional looking? Does it look appropriate for what you're doing? So, if someone's paying you money for a treatment, are you going to use a porcelain soup spoon or a stainless steel arched tool, for example? Well, for those of you that follow me, you'll know my answer to that. The soup spoon is a bit like my trademark, and yes, I actually use them professionally. Probably not the same ones that you're going to find in your local Chinese restaurant, but not that different. The shape is basically the same, although, unless I went out of my way to show you, you wouldn't actually know it was a spoon. Some people prefer metal tools and others prefer natural stones, but remember that professional treatments require professional level cleaning, so that means disinfection. So you have to bear that in mind when you're looking for a more professional looking tool. So, in summary, there's a huge variety of gua sha tools which you can choose from, but you've got to think about what would be the most appropriate for you in your situation. Most people overthink this part of gua sha. It just has to be smooth, comfortable, and the right size and weight for your hand to hold. It just has to be appropriate for how you're using it, whether you're using it at home or whether you're using it in a professional capacity. You don't need to get stressed about the rest of it. You get a tool and you try it out. If it doesn't feel right, you use that experience to get a better tool for you. It can be a bit of trial and error until you find the right one. And remember, it's not specifically the tool that's going to change your face or your body when you're using gua sha. It's what you're doing with the tool which makes all the changes. So that's it for another episode of the Gua Sha Show. If you want to know more about tools, there are a few videos on my YouTube channel, which you can find in the show notes, and there's even more in my Ecology in Motion Gua Sha Certificate course, which you can find at Komorebi Institute website. So stay safe, and I'll be seeing you next week. Thank you for listening to this podcast. You can check out the show notes at clivewhittam.com/guashashow. You'll also find loads of free videos and information. And if you need more help with gua sha, definitely check out my online courses at the Komorebi Institute. I'll include the link in the show notes too. Talk to you soon.